Welcome to the Simply Mindful Wellness Podcast. Join your host, Tracy, as she takes a deeper look into nourishing your body, mind, and soul. Because being well creates the freedom to live life the way you want.
Hello, and welcome to the Simply Mindful Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Richardson, therapist, wellness practitioner, educator, and author, helping people to remove their blocks to healing, improve their wellness so they can feel their best. So welcome to the watchers and the listeners. Today, I'm joined by V Portland, the queen of confidence. Not only is she the founder of an award-winning social enterprise, she actively promotes self-esteem and confidence and inclusivity through workshops to young people. Now, V's had quite an interesting journey to get to this point. And if you meet her, you'll be greeted by an effervescent personality and a glowing smile. But there is much more to be than this. So please, V, can you introduce yourself and tell the watchers and the listeners all about yourself?
I think apart from not having a crown, I just like what you said. Let's talk about that. I need a crown. I'm missing a crown.
Right. Why V a crown?
So I run Venus Discover You Love You CIC, which is a community interest company. And through that, I go into schools, groups, libraries, working with children, young people and women. And I teach them self-esteem and confidence. I also include a lot of kindness and acceptance and inclusion. They're all very big lifestyle choices for me. They're not buzzwords, they're lifestyle choices. I do that. I love it. I work with children as young as 3 normally, but when I do my Find Your Fabulous sessions in libraries, I have babies and toddlers joining in as well, which is amazing. And then I create happiness products. I'm an author like you. I write inclusive children's picture books and positive growth books for adults. And I'm also a motivational speaker. So, and that's just today. I might change my mind tomorrow about something else that I do.
Where do you find time to sleep?
Sometimes I do wonder, but no, I do sleep.
Amazing. So the Venus Discover You Love You CIC then, tell us about like how this has come about then, how this has evolved.
Everything I do, before I say that, my head lives in a musical. So every time I say something, I think of a song. So now I've got Bryan Adams in my head singing everything I do.
Sing away.
So everything I do because someone asked me to do it. They saw me doing it myself and then asked me to do it. So a very condensed version of my story is that I grew up being told I was fat, ugly, and worthless, so I believed it. And then I reached a point in life where I could either change things or end things because they couldn't stay the same. And I know that you're a big dog lover as well, so I know that you'll understand. I just got a kitten and I thought no one's going to love her as much as I do. So I had to stay alive for as long as she was alive for. And that was the plan. You know, that it's just like, well, I've got to change things. I'm staying alive for her. Now I've got the Bee Gees in my head. I stayed alive for her and I thought, well, I've got to start challenging myself, you know, and I stopped seeing my family. So I cut out all the toxicity. And then I decided to start saying yes to things. I'd always said, you know, I'm a big advocate of going, no, don't overstep my boundaries. That's important. But I'd been saying no because I felt that I couldn't do it, that I wasn't worth doing it, that I wasn't capable of doing it. So because I'd come close to death, both mentally and physically, a few times by that point, I decided to start challenging myself and thinking, I've lived through the worst things, so I'm not going to die from trying something new, so I may as well try it. And this will come as no surprise, but I love musicals. And I was watching Singing in the Rain one day. And at this point, I'd been told that I'd never work again because my mental and physical health were so bad that I'd never work again. And I was watching Singing in the Rain and the word burlesque flashed up. And I thought, I wonder if anyone still does that. And I found a class that was 10 minutes away and I arranged a lift and I booked my place before I could convince myself otherwise. And I arranged the lift with someone I'd never met before because I thought I'm not likely to let them down when they pick me up. And I'd always loved dancing, but wasn't allowed to do it until I was 15 when I had a part-time job and could pay to go myself. And because I was the oldest, I always ended up teaching the younger ones. And so I went to this burlesque class and I loved it. And people said, you're really good at it. And then someone in the class said, I'm going to put on a show. Will you help me organise it? And I said, yeah, of course. But if I'm organising it, you've got to perform in it. No. I was so paranoid that I couldn't cope with people singing me happy birthday, because that meant that people were looking at me. I was always in black and baggy. My hair was always down so that I only looked out of one eye. And bearing in mind that I worked with children, I was convinced that people were looking at me going, she's too ugly to be out. She should be at home because she's too scary to be with children. So the thought of me getting on stage and dancing was just, no, that's not going to happen. But she wore me down. So I finally agreed and I said, okay, I'll do it once. And I had a backup plan because I was convinced they were all going to see me, you know, with half naked, and they were all going to start vomiting at the sight of it. So I was planning, and I'm emetophobic, so I'm phobic about vomit. So I'm thinking, then I'll be throwing up everywhere and then they'll throw up more. And then so my only option is a nunnery in the Himalayas. And I even looked at flights and I thought, that's it. That's what I'm doing. As soon as it's over and they all hate me, I'm going. And they loved me. And they all laughed at the right bits because I did traditional performance, you know, where I did comedy burlesque. And people were like, you're a natural. You need to do this again. And I eventually agreed. And from that one only performance, I went on to become an international performer, which is still quite baffling. I was there, but I'm like, was I there? But I was. And people saw me dance and they said, you don't look like an ordinary burlesque dancer, because I'm in a larger body and I'm older. And they're wrong, because I know women in their 70s that do burlesque. You know, it's incredible. And we're all different shapes and sizes. But they said, will you teach me? So I said, all right, then. So I started teaching. When I was doing the burlesque, I've always loved like 50s clothes and music and dancing, not the values. But so I heard about this clothing company and I thought, nothing's going to fit me. You know, I'd always had problems with clothes because my waist is quite small in comparison to my boobs and bum. So if I wore separates, I'd often look like I was sat in a flower pot, you know, for it to fit my bum. And, you know, so I went up to this clothes shop with a friend who was much smaller. And all the way there, I'm thinking, I'm excited, but she's going to find things that fit and nothing's going to fit me. And I get there and I try things on and I phone my partner and I could hear, and I say, you know, I said that nothing's going to fit me. And I hear him take a deep breath because he was expecting me to get really upset that nothing fits. I hate shopping. But my arse looks very good in this, in other words. and he said, okay, I'm sending you money. So he's sent me money and started my habit of buying reproduction clothes. So from having the clothes, I started going to vintage events. People saw me dancing. You don't look like an ordinary dance teacher. Will you teach me? So I started teaching and I specialised in people who thought they couldn't dance. So I would have women coming to my burlesque workshops who were saying, I've never been sexy in my life. This is ridiculous. You can't make me, you know, what's the saying? Silk purse out of a sow's ear. That came up a lot. And at the end, they all went away, you know, I'm so fabulous, you know, and I'd get calls from people saying, my bank manager's agreed an overdraft because I wiggled in this morning and things like that. And so that was amazing. And because I'd been working on myself throughout that time of, I'd always worked with children and I'd always taught them to be accepting of who they are and of who other people are and being kind. But I'd never worked on myself the same way. So I'd been working on that with myself. And then people started saying, I want to feel as good as the ladies in your classes do, but I'm not dancing and I'm not taking my clothes off. And around the same time, I'd been nominated to be a body image movement global ambassador, which is linked to a film called Embrace. And so I thought, okay, I'll start teaching that then. Start teaching confidence, how I did it. And at the same time, I was running a voluntary branch of a project called the Red Box Project, which was helping to eradicate period poverty in schools. So I'd go into schools and teachers and teaching staff would say, V, what do you do? So I'd say, well, I help people feel good about themselves. We really need that in schools. So that's when I decided to set up the CIC so that I could apply for funding to reach those children that are in schools that couldn't afford it, in youth groups who couldn't afford to pay for a facilitator, domestic refugees who can't afford to get people in. So the CIC was there because I feel money should never be a barrier to helping us feel good about ourselves. And if I can make a difference there. So that's why the CIC was formed. That was a very long answer. I'm sorry.
Nice. It's a fabulous answer to kind of see your journey and your transformation through that as well, not only through yourself, but then what you're giving to the world as well. So how do you get to promoting confidence and inclusivity, and how does that work then in practice?
It depends on the age group, because obviously what I'll do with a 3-4-year-old is very different to what I would do with a 17-year-old. So with the younger ones, I'd read one of my children's books and we would do affirmations and we'll do things like kindness caricatures, we'll do compliments, we'll talk about how brilliant we are, you know, and talk about how fantastic our bodies are, not in how it looks, but in I've got knees that let me jump. Jumping's brilliant, let's jump, you know, so things like that. And I do animal breathing with them, which is really silly. So things like a bee breath, where we breathe in and we buzz out, but because we're bees and the way bees get other bees to smell the beautiful pollen and take the pollen from flowers is they wiggle their bottoms. So I've got all of these kids and me and the teachers and teaching staff, all they're going So it's about being silly. And sometimes I will still do that with the teenagers when they're all getting a bit sort of sullen and, oh yeah, we're bored, miss. Okay, get up. And, you know, I've even had year 10 stomping around as dinosaurs before now.
Amazing.
They were feeling very demoralized about applying for jobs and colleges. And I said, right, we need to embrace our inner T-Rex. I got them all up stomping around the room. And because it was silly, they were laughing, and laughing makes them more relaxed. So they felt more capable of doing things. And because I do everything as well, you know, I don't sit there and go, be dinosaurs. You know, I'm up there like this, walking around. So they join in, because if Miss can be silly, then I can be silly. And yeah, so it does depend. So sometimes I might play games with them. Other times it'll be conversational. So I'm doing 2 different schools next week. I've got reception year 1 and year 2. So that will be lots of drawing and talking. And then on Friday, I'm doing all of a secondary school. So that will be very conversation based. And although I will have lesson plans, I will let them lead the way, because it's important. Children often don't feel heard, and it's important that it doesn't matter that my lesson plan isn't finished. It's important that if they've got any question that they feel is important enough to ask in front of their peers, then it deserves an answer. So we will work on that instead, and maybe come back to the lesson plan, or we might end up doing something else completely different. But yeah, it's the teenagers especially, I feel it's important that they get to talk and feel heard and know that what they've got to say is important. You know, and it's like, especially at that age, I often say that everyone wants to be unique as long as they're like everyone else. And, you know, and that's when you're that age, especially, it's hard to stand out and you think that you're the only weirdo in the room. But really, we're all just weirdos in different packages. That's all it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I love the fact that you're getting them involved and they're actually, you know, responding to that positively, because the way I look at what you've said is it's bringing more joy into their lives. Yeah. Because like you said, anytime that you're laughing, you're happier, you're doing stuff that you enjoy. For me, that's all about raising your internal resonance and vibration.
Yeah. Which
then radiates out and our energy then creates, yeah, and the people that we're around benefit from it as well. So in a purely selfish way, I would love it if everybody could come to your workshops, because if everybody was happier, there'd be less stress in the world.
Definitely, definitely. And I believe that if we're kinder to and more accepting of ourselves, we'll be kinder to and more accepting of others. Wouldn't that be amazing? If we were all like, yeah, I'm a great person. Are you a great person? I'm a great person. Let's be friends. I long for the day where people don't need to worry about labels or what gender they are or what race they are or what sexuality they are, where we are just judged on, are you a decent human or not?
Oh, it's music to my ears.
Yeah. That's it, though. I think that's all that matters, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think in your introduction, you mentioned it's a lifestyle choice. So for me, you have choice in everything. And that's what differentiates us, is the choices that we make. So when people are feeling powerless, they're feeling, you know, suppressed, whatever, you always have a choice in how you respond to something, if that is the only choice that you have. But
yeah,
finding the joy, finding the love, being kind. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. And I don't, when I shared my story, you know, I said, oh, I chose to make changes. That was not easy. You know, that took a 2-3 year process. You know, it sounds much quicker when I talk about it, because you don't want to hear about, you know, on that Monday afternoon, I sat and cried, and that Wednesday morning, I did this, and, you know, but I did make a choice. And yeah, I feel that sometimes the choices aren't great choices, but there are always choices.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, crying is a choice, and crying is good for us. Failing, yeah, is good for us. And I think that following, you were saying, the narrative and the labels and how society expects us all to be. Who says, is my attitude to that? Who says that you have to be labelled, pigeonholed, put in a box? You are this, you are this, you are this. Actually, you can be anything that you want to be. And the work that you're doing, I think, will bring that out, especially in young children who maybe don't feel that they have a voice in the world yet.
Yeah, but that was the reason I wrote my first children's book, was because I work with a lot of children that live in poverty and think that they can only do what their parents did. So girls think they have to get pregnant straight from school to get a council flat. Boys think they just have to go on universal credit. And so I wanted to, and also having worked with children a lot, I've spent a lot of time at bus stops and, you know, because they love buses and trains and things. And the amount of times I've heard a child go, where are we going? I've told you where we're going. Shut up. Mm. So in my first book, it's called Where Are We Going? And it's in the same amount of words as it takes to say, shut up, I told you where we're going, or be quiet, I'm on the phone. We can go on a rainbow sea in a boat full of bubbles. You know, so to give people the option to daydream, because when we're little, we're taught to imagine and think of all of these spectacular things. And then you get to secondary school, grow up, don't be stupid, think of the future. And it's like, well, why can't we stop dreaming? Why do we have to stop dreaming? So I wanted to write a book that got to young children to help them see that, yeah, most of us are not going to have afternoon tea with the man in the moon. You know, I know that, but how lovely to be able to dream and think, well, I'd love to have, you know, it, and it could be a simple journey from, look at the man in the moon, Mum, I could have afternoon tea with the man in the moon. And then as you get older, the stars are amazing. And then as you get a bit older, isn't science great? And then, you know, it's a simple start, but we don't, those simple starts are the seeds that get sown to become beautiful flowers. oak trees even, you know. So, yeah, I think it's important to give people of all ages that hope that this, in this moment, is not all there is, because it can always change.
Oh, for sure. And I think both you and I are products of change and being in a situation where it can feel hopeless and overwhelming. And actually, you know, it's not always like that. Coming back to what you were saying, there is scientific evidence out there with regards to daydreaming, that it takes us into a part of our brain and activates certain brain waves that make us more creative, make us smarter, develops our IQ, our emotional quotient and stuff like that. But also from a health perspective, it boosts your immune system, which a lot of people don't know about, but the science is there and it's basically something called your redox potential, which is your ability to deal with free radicals. And we get free radicals through stress. So when we're stressed, we have these events that take place in our body that use up all of our antioxidants. So what it does is it helps us to get rid of those. And we do that through dreaming. But when you were saying daydreaming, when was the last time as an adult you just looked out of the window?
I do that quite a lot.
Well, yes, I'm sure you do. And I do it myself. But when you speak to people, the theme that I'm getting from you is it's all about bringing people back to play.
Yeah. There is a lot of that. And I love the fact that for a child, we'd call it daydreaming, imagination. But for those of us that work in the fields that we work in, it's manifestation. And it's just the same word, same thing, really, isn't it? We're dreaming about what we want. But we wouldn't say to a three-year-old, what are you manifesting? You know, but really, it's just the language that's different.
Oh, for sure. And you think of all those three-year-olds out there that then went on to be authors or, you know, film producers or whatever, because it all starts with an imagination, doesn't it? Yeah. And an idea. And even, you know, the industries that you and I are in, it starts with an idea.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's when I do book readings with my children's books, I will always have someone that will come up to me and either the child or the parent will go, oh, she wants to be an author when she grows up. And I've got to know two girls through Twitter and through writing. And they both published their first books when they were pre-teens.
Wow.
So I will tell them about these two girls and say, well, why not now? You know, do it now. And it doesn't matter if the book is you with your colouring and handwritten it and you give it to your grandma at Christmas. But there's no reason why we can't start now. To do these things and, you know, and then say, oh, I was an author by the time I was 12, because you're still an author, even if you don't go a traditional route, you know, it's
absolutely.
And with the way that we can, I mean, they could even put that coloured in crayoned book onto Amazon and get Auntie Ermintrude in New Zealand to buy it. You're a published author then, you know.
Absolutely.
Why not? Why does it all have to be about big numbers and book charts and things like that? You know, it's, you know, although we're with what we do, connection is a big part of it, but we can use this wonderful little box that can take our messages everywhere. And yeah, so why not have lots of authors that are less than 10 or 12 or whatever? And
oh, that sounds absolutely fantastic. Imagine that inner confidence that comes out and the influence that will have on yeah. other people, just, you know, just from that little bit of support that they've gained.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're working with children then, you know, it could be different for different ages, but what are your key observations in the people that you're supporting?
There are more issues now because of social media and things like that, and information is more readily available. But the messages are still the same that I got when I was a child. You know, the things we see on TV, the adverts. So those worries are not new. They're new to the person, but they're not new in the universe, you know. So we still have adverts that tell us we should be this way or that way or the other way, and we believe it. But throughout history, body types have changed as to what's attractive and, you know, and all of this sort of thing. So had I been born in Rubens' time, I would be a multimillionaire on billboards everywhere. But because I was born now, I have all of this negative language that other people might put upon me because I'm not a size zero blonde lady, you know. And it's about teaching them that those messages we're receiving have been cultivated by someone who wants to make money out of our insecurities. So it's about getting that message across, but also about, even with children's programs, the messages we get are still, there was a Scooby-Doo film, the cartoon version, and is it Daphne, the red-headed one?
Mm-hmm.
And she got kidnapped by a witch. Now, in most TV programs, most films, think of the baddies. The baddies are nearly always fat, bald, disabled, or disfigured. Right up to the most recent Bond film, the Witches film that came out. Differences are considered bad, and children are getting those messages. And in this Scooby-Doo film, this fat, ugly witch, you know, that's how they portrayed her, kidnapped Daphne and cursed her to be the worst thing that Daphne could think anyone could be. And you're there and you're thinking, you know, could it be that she loses the ability to love her friends or something like that? Daphne's worst fear was that she would be fat and no longer attractive to men.
Wow.
And it's like children are seeing those messages. Children are seeing messages that if you look different, you are wrong, you are bad, you are not wanted. And that needs to change, but it hasn't changed in the history of TV. So although things are very different, you know, the programs that you and I would have watched as children are very different now. They're more high tech and shiny and glitzy and everything. A lot of the time, the messages are still the same. Difference is bad. And when there are studies that show that children won't make friends with someone who looks different to them, whether that be due to race, gender, glasses, size, disability, disfigurement, it's just awful that they're getting those messages, which is, again, so in my children's books, less than 4% of books have, and that's across the board, have a person with a disability as the main character. And nearly always the book is about the disability. As a disabled person, I'm very aware that awareness is very important, but they also point out how I'm different to other people. So in my book, the main character has a visible difference, but it's not part of the story because I want readers to read it and go, I really like Emily. I want her to be my friend.
Mm.
Oh, she's got a prosthetic leg. You know, it's not about, I don't want Emily's leg waving in the air going, look, I'm different. You know, I want people to see that we all have far more in common than that which makes us different. And that starts from a very young age to show people that difference is okay. You know, it's, that's what makes the world wonderful nearly always, you know. So it's important, yeah, to get those messages across that, again, kinder accepting of ourselves, kinder accepting of other people. And
for sure,
it's a simple premise, but it's Absolutely. Hard to grasp.
Well, if we were all the same, it'd be bloody boring, wouldn't it?
It would. Really would. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I worked in education for 10 years as well, and I'm fully inclusive of things like that. There was, you know, no tolerance of anything like that, having grown up in a time through the 80s where things were stigmatised. And, you know, I went to a Catholic school, so things were a certain way. Oh, hello. For those of you that are listening, we just have a little visitor in one of these cats.
Yeah, one of them will always come and join me at some point.
That was lovely. But yeah, things were stigmatized and stuff, and I love the fact that actually it's just a feature of somebody. It's not the be all and end all of the story. like you were saying, it's just a feature, and we all have features, you know, some of them we're not necessarily proud of, but we all have features that make us who we are, that make us different, that, you know, are part of our story, part of our journey. And if we can get that message over to children, then surely that then can be carried forward then into, you know, future generations. So what you're doing is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. I mean, I feel, you know, you get a lot of people, is this what you say? For those of you that are listening, Aurelia's just flashed her bum at the camera. that's the cat, not me. You get a lot of people saying you're banning books, banning children's books, banning programs. Children don't see a diverse range of people because you don't want to corrupt them. And a brilliant book came out last week by Juno Dawson, and it's her first pitch book. She's written some great teenage books. She's also written one for adults, but I haven't read that one yet. And this book is a picture book aimed at, say, 3 to 8-year-olds. And I read it at an event at the weekend. And in it, it's in the story, all of the kids in the class are talking to this child and saying, "Where's your brother Bill gone? You know, is he up a mountain? Is he hot air ballooning? Is he swimming with sharks? Is he ill? Is he this? Is he that?" And then the little girl, the child keeps saying, "Oh, don't, you know, hun, you need to chill," is the name of the book. So they keep saying that. And then towards the end, she goes, "My brother Bill's none of those things. My brother Billy is now my sister Lily." And then she goes, "It was a bit odd at first, but she looks a bit different, but she's still who she's always been, but she's much happier now." And then the kids in the book go, "Oh, so they're not with sharks then." Because that's the important bit.
Well, that's the best thing that could happen, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was lovely to read it with, I had a few children from, the youngest was about 3 up to 9, 10, and they were all the same. You know, it was just, "Oh, that happened. That's all right then. But what about the sharks? What about the moon? What about, you know?" And that's why it's important to have these books that are written to help to show children the differences and the wondrous, vast array of the type of people there are in the world. And that includes, so I said about less than 4% of books with a disabled person in, it's less than 7% for people of colour. So
wow, still.
To have more books where children see themselves in a book, representation matters. So for me, those messages, the earlier we get in to share those messages of kindness, of acceptance, of self-love and love for others, because I've worked with too many women in their 50s and 60s and 70s who have lived their lives going, "When I'm this, I will." And it's, well, if you've got to this point and you've not done it, now's the time or never at all. You know, so that's why I start so young, because it's from the age of 3 that children start making judgments about bodies, theirs and others. So to get in there that early and teach them that all bodies are wonderful, you know, and that bodies shouldn't be judged no matter what size, because we don't know the story behind that body. You know, we can't judge someone for being a certain way because we don't know their story. So can't we just accept them? And I shared a meme earlier this week, and on it, and it was a picture in a shop window, and it said, "I love you." And then underneath it said, "I know you're probably thinking I don't know you, so how can I love you? But if people can hate for no reason, I can love for no reason." And that's what we need to do. We need to teach children from a very young age that we all matter, mm-hmm. that we're all important, that it doesn't matter, that it's who we are and what we do that matters. This body that I walk around in is just a meat parcel. That's all it is. It doesn't contain my personality. It doesn't contain the very essence of who V is. it's just the thing that helps me do everything I love. And that's all of its importance there. And it shouldn't be about whether you have cellulite or not, or whether you've got a thigh gap, or whether you've got a Kardashian bum, or whatever. Does your body mean you can live? Yes, then it's brilliant. You can't ask for anything better.
If people were aware of everything right now that is going on inside your body just to keep you alive, just as you sat there, right, they would be, mine would be blown. Because it's not just one thing, it's millions of things going on, cellular reactions that are taking place, you know, these synapses and chemicals and hormones and everything going on. And this is, like you said, it's a meat package. I call it a skin suit. That basically this is how you're projected out into the world, but actually you have no clue what's going on inside that person.
Yeah. And they are incredible, aren't they? Even, you know, my body is broken and disabled and in pain all the time. But isn't it amazing that it still allows me to get up on a dance floor and dance? Isn't it amazing that I can still cuddle my cats, that I can read books, that I can talk to people? Yeah, those are the important things, not the fact that I have to buy a double-digit clothing number. You know, that's the least important thing about me and my existence, as it should be for everybody else. You know, it's if you're a decent human, I'll like you. If you're not, then you're not my person.
That's my criteria right there. So with everything that you do then, what's the biggest misconception that people kind of think about when they consider what you do?
It's not so much with children, with teenagers a little bit, with teen girls. They struggle thinking that confidence is arrogant, confidence is bullies, confidence is loud. And that's often the same when I do workshops with women. I'll say to them, okay, what does a confident woman look like? And she's slim and she's wearing a suit and she's wearing high heels and she's the boss and everyone's terrified of her. And all of these other negative things. And I go, am I confident? And they'll go, well, yeah, you're here teaching us how to feel confident. I said, and how similar am I to this person? Other than the fact that we both have a vagina, there's nothing more. So confidence isn't the same for everybody. So I will happily stand in front of a room of people and talk. I will happily walk into a room and chat to anyone. But I'm not loud. And if I'm with people who talk over me, then I have the confidence to think, you're not worth my time. If you can't show me the respect of listening, then I won't talk. It's not because I'm shy. It's not because I don't feel I have anything to say. It's because I value my words, my time, my energy enough not to waste them on people who will not show me the respect of listening. So confidence doesn't have to be loud. It doesn't have to be brash. It is for some people. It's not for me. I am through and through an introvert. You know, I love people, but oh my goodness, do I love time alone? You know, I need that. I'm like a mobile phone. You know, I need charging up on my own and then I will go out and I will dazzle. But then I come home and I'm like, no, quiet now. And people need to see that the confidence is different for everybody and that confidence is good. If we, you know, I mean, there are horrible statistics around if someone doesn't have confidence, they're more likely to end up in abusive relationships. They're more likely to stay in toxic relationships. They're more likely to get assaulted, to get raped, to be in badly paid jobs. There's all these awful things that will happen. And I know they're all true because that was me. And now I feel that it's important to teach. That's going back to what I said earlier about following. If a child wants to talk, let them, because they need to know that their voice is important from a very young age. And that's confidence. If their confidence is just in the I will talk when I want to, not necessarily I'm going to stand on a stage and play rock music forever. You know, it's different for everybody, and know that all of that is okay, that we care for ourselves and that we value ourselves. And if we do that, we're going to get treated better nearly always, because we're modeling how we want to be treated.
Absolutely. It all starts with you, doesn't it? And what you're willing to accept and so on. So what would be your biggest tip then? Would it be about the self-acceptance thing, or would it be something else? So to help people to improve their confidence?
One of the things that really helped me, and this is what I tell all my clients to do, and the teenagers, but predominantly the women I work with, it's all very well to say, well, you've got to learn to accept yourself. If you hate yourself, like I did, if you can't look in a mirror because you don't like what you see, you can't just wake up and go, oh, well, I accept myself today. It doesn't work like that. So what I did for myself, and what I encourage others to do, is to have two jars, ideally glass jars that you can see through, and post-it notes. I need shares in post-it notes, the amount of times I recommend them for the activities I do. Every time you get a negative thought about yourself, write it on a post-it note, put it in one jar. Then find two positives about yourself and put it in the other jar. And at first, that's incredibly hard. But for me, it was things like, a lady smiled at me on the bus today. And for a lot of us, a lot of people, that won't even register. But when you're in a really deep, dark place, someone smiling at you is acknowledging the fact that you exist. And that's really powerful. So at first it was things that other people were doing. And then as I got more practiced at doing it, I got to the stage where, you know, I like my arms because they allowed me to hug someone today. You know, I like my feet because they let me dance tonight, you know, and build it up that way. And at the beginning, it would be a real challenge to find two things. As you get more practiced at it, it's much easier. And you see that there's far more good about you than bad. And we're training our brains to find the good. And just as much as we can train them to always find the negative, we can train them to find the positive too. And it's, for me, back then, if I had to look in a mirror, and it was, you know, if I had to, because I never wanted to, I'd look at this bit, then this bit, then this bit, then this bit, all the way down. Now, I very rarely look in a mirror because I'm like, I know I'm fabulous, and I'm nearly always running late. So it's, you know, now I have no problem with mirrors. I have no problem with looking at myself. But I also have that belief that even if I went out in a sack, I'm still me, you know, and I like who I am. So this doesn't matter.
Oh, fantastic. So where can people find out more about you, V, and where are you hanging out online?
So I've got my website, which is venes.co.uk. So it's Venes, V-I-E-N-E-S-S. I'm on all social media. I'm not saying I use all social media, but I'm on it. I haven't quite got the grasp of TikTok. I keep trying and then I go, nope, can't do it. But I'm Venes CIC on all social media. So, and I'm quite easy to find because I'm the only V on my entire Facebook. So, so I'm quite easy to find.
Fabulous. All right, we'll add those links to the show notes as well. So my last question for you today, and it's something that I ask to all my guests, is what does the term mindful wellness mean to you?
I put on an event on Saturday, and it was a positive wellness event. And some of the feedback has been, it's been the best wellness event because I offered entertainment. And for me, my wellness comes to singing along and dancing along to things. So wellness doesn't have to be sitting cross-legged in the lotus position and omming. You know, mindfulness can be whatever works well for you. So for me, that is doing what makes you happy. Mindfulness is about knowing what's going on around you and being aware of it and appreciating it. But that doesn't have to be the same thing for every person, because we're all different. So if I said, oh, you know, I've gone through this whole thing going, oh yes, accept differences. Differences are great. If I then went, oh yes, but the only way to do mindfulness is to suck a raisin, I'd be a hypocrite. So yeah. So if it makes you happy, as long as you're not hurting anyone, with that proviso, but if it makes you happy, do it. You know, I'm rubbish at meditating. I've got a popcorn brain. So I'm there and I'm thinking about all these other things. Put me on a dance floor and that's it. I'm chilled as anything. Even if I'm dancing to, you know, a fast jive song or something, that is my meditation. So it is different for everybody. There is no wrong way to do it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today, V. And as I said to everybody out there, thank you for watching and listening. I'll put V's contact details in the show notes if you want to get in touch with her. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Simply Mindful Wellness podcast. Join us next time for a new episode.